wanted to get up and do my thing.
Go ahead.
I want to get into it, man, you know.
Go ahead.
Like a sex machine, man.
Yeah.
Moving, doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Can I count it off?
Go ahead.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Lovumentary Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Bagley, and I don't remember what episode this is that we're on. But I'm here today with Melissa, my new co-host. Say hi, Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
Melissa is the coolest girl in the world. She is here to help out with the Kickstarter. She's going to be my co-host for probably the next year's worth of podcast episodes. So I'm super excited to have her here. Next week we'll be doing a podcast to kind of talk about what brought us together and why we're both involved in the Lovumentary project and why it's so important to us. So I'm super excited about that. The Kickstarter is going to be phenomenal.
So, yeah, there's three ways that you can help us out. Our Kickstarter is set to launch on September 17th. So just let everybody know who's following along, how they can support us when it comes out. Just spread it. We really just want people to follow along with us and hear these stories as we go along. You can also join the 30-day challenge, which we're in the middle of right now. Basically, the 30-day challenge, the premise of it is to help identify what it is that's keeping you from allowing space for true love to enter your life. So even though we're halfway through it, we'd love to have you join us and figure out what that one thing is for you. So you can do that on our Facebook page. You can find the 30-day challenge on our website as well. And the last thing that you can do to help us, we are going to be hitting the road toward the end of this month, September. So we would love some other love stories. So if you've got a great love story that you want to tell us about or point us in the direction of, just let us know. And we'll kind of include that in our trip if it makes sense. And also just your questions about love as we go and interview these couples. We really want to know what your burning questions are so that we can put them in the interviews as well and get all of those answered.
Exactly. We want this whole podcast, this whole trip to be not just for the two of us, but for everybody. So your involvement would mean so much to us in any way possible. All right. Now, this episode, I really wanted to sit down and talk about a subject that's a little bit difficult to talk about, at least for me. I sat down with Kristen and Alicia. They are sex therapists, and we talked a little bit about sex and religion and how the two mix, and specifically, the majority of their clients are women, so there's a lot that pertains to them, but it is pretty universally applicable, and I think that there's just a lot of confusion in that area, and so I thought that we would address it and kind of get their opinions and see what people, the majority of their clients, come in and struggle with as far as intimacy is concerned. And I was really, really fascinated by the stuff that we talked about, and I hope that you guys enjoyed as well. It was super educational, informative, and hopefully it helps somebody out there a little bit. So expect another episode from us soon, probably from me and Melissa introducing the Kickstarter and what we're doing together. And other than that, hope you have an amazing week and you enjoy this episode. This is Nate, and I'm here today with Kristen Hodson, who is the founder of The Healing Group, a women's mental health clinic in Salt Lake City, Utah, and the co-author of Real Intimacy, a couple's guide to healthy, genuine sexuality, and her sister, Alicia Worthington, who is the other co-author of the book and a sex and intimacy coach here at The Healing Group as well. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
You are so welcome. I'm glad that I could come in and visit you and talk to you for a few minutes. I've been really excited to talk about the subject of sex, in a sense, and intimacy, and kind of it's something I don't have a whole lot of experience with, especially, well, maybe that's an overshare, but but healthy sexual relationships, I think, are just really not talked about a lot. Most people, I think, learn about sex from, there's a lot of unhealthy sources out there.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think a lot of people learn what not to do based on either parents or religion or other scenarios of don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And you get to the point where you're like, what do I do then to create what I want?
Yeah, let's talk. Can we talk about that for a minute? Like, as far as religion is concerned, or parents, do you think that the way that a lot of religious organizations teach about sexual relationships is that a healthy thing that they do? Is it a healthy way that they teach, or do you think that it needs to be changed?
Well, it almost seems like there's a dearth of a lack of teaching within religious organizations. It's more like what Kristen said. It's more like don't, but then there's not really any discussion of what is healthy and what looks good, and here's how you engage in this in a healthy, good way for you. And they leave it to the parents, but then the parents don't know what to say or what to do, and so then there's just nothing. Then there's just this vacuum, and people are entering into relationships really without a clue as to what to do. And there's a reason why sex is the number two reason for divorce, because people are going about this in a way that they want to experience this but just don't know how.
Well, in that vacuum, I think we live in a day and age now where we have access to so much information that it's getting filled up with something. And so if parents don't know how to teach, and then there's not these sources of healthy and positive sexuality, it can get filled in with media and porn and internet and people trying to piece together what is healthy sexuality and teaching their kids that same thing. Or not teaching their kids, and kids trying to piece together what this looks like.
I'm sorry, if I may add one more thing.
Go for it.
I think there's a big difference between religious tradition versus doctrine. And I think a lot of times people will confuse that. Well, this is what we're supposed to do. Well, really, it's not doctrine. It's not anything based on factual, this is what God said or whatever. It's just been handed down from generation to generation.
Can you give me an example of that? Maybe something that is taught as tradition and interpreted as doctrine, and it may not be doctrine.
Yes, let me think. How about the idea that, well, okay, within the LDS tradition or doctrine and mm-hmm. or, there's a lot of feeling, the only statement really on LDS.org is don't do anything unnatural. Well, that's very vague. What does that mean?
It's open to a lot of interpretation.
Yes, right. And so then you can have groups or you can have a well-meaning bishop or parents take that to mean, well, it means this, you can't do this. Well, you know, and so it's open to lots of interpretation that then gets taught in an incorrect way.
So, and that gets passed down.
Mm-hmm.
Like what are some specific things that you think would be seen as unnatural or natural that maybe caused some controversy?
How specific would you like us to get?
I would love you to be as specific as possible.
Okay, so you have in our book, and this was something that we had to take out of the book, but specifically, people want to know about oral sex, anal sex.
Masturbation.
Is this natural? Is this not natural? And really what we do is we put that back, because when you research within the doctrine, there isn't anything that says within a marriage what you can and can't do, that you are the stewards over your relationship. But I think people have moved from being the experts of their relationship and their bodies and are allowing other people to be the experts on their bodies and their relationship. So those specifically, a lot of people are like, oral sex, they'll have a strong opinion. And others are like, no, you can totally do that in a relationship. And that gets confusing.
Right. But there's no actual doctrinal line out there that says, no, you can't do this, or yes, you should, or yes, you can do this. It's
back in the day.
Yeah, early Christianity, you can find it. And so, again, like I say, for more modern times, unless leaders come out and say, you know, that was wrong or whatever, it sticks.
I would even say lingerie.
Yeah.
Is something that people wonder about. Can we do this?
Can we use this?
Yeah, and toys or things like that, even that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Because, again, people are looking to somebody else to decide for their relationship instead of looking to each other.
So what's a healthy way to approach that then? If you're in a sexual relationship, what's a healthy way to address that topic and make those decisions about what's best for you?
Talking.
Yeah.
That's hard for people. When we take live calls, we have taken live calls on a radio station, and people would call to say wanting to solve a problem but wanting to bypass the conversation. And trying to find, to go to great lengths to solve it without talking.
Without actually talking.
Without having to talk about it. And being able to negotiate, and because that can trigger big arguments in people. People can have a lot of responses, and then it turns into a fight, and then they don't get anywhere.
Right. Which is something that we're trying to work on, helping people understand that sex is a skill that you learn, as opposed to, we find that a lot of people enter a relationship thinking that it's going to somehow be magic. Like it's like on the movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can go have this, and you're supposed to have this incredible sexual repertoire, and you know how to do everything, and it's just going to be just mind-blowing, and then it doesn't turn out that way, because really this is a new skill that you're having to learn, and you're having to learn together. And if you don't,
it requires practice.
It does. Lots of good practice.
This is a funny, and this is in the personal realm. I have a journal back when I was 17 or so, and I remember speculating on what sex was going to be like. And I put that it was going to be 8 hours of just fantastic evening. And I look at him and be like, shoot me now.
Eight hours of sex would be miserable.
It would be awful. But I think a lot of people go into it with that idea that it's going to be magic and amazing, especially that first time. It's
right.
Not usually.
Right.
Yeah, it may not be for the first couple of months or even longer.
It can take a long time to work it out.
Because you're learning about yourself, your partner's body, you know, and how this is working together, and talking about it and being able to say, is this working for you? Not, and maybe not during sex, but having conversations when you're going on a walk and you're like, hey, can we talk about this? Can we talk about, mm-hmm. I really like it when you kiss my ear. I don't really like it when you suck on my toe. Or somebody would really like that, you know, but.
We call it create a positive sandwich. One of the ways you can talk about it is start with the thing you like, talk about the area that you would like to change or tweak, and end with a thing you like. And that can make people more receptive to hearing what you want to say.
It's a good way to get feedback.
Yeah.
So what are some things that you guys see regularly in couples that come in with maybe struggles in their relationship in the sexual realm? What are some of those common issues, and why do you think they arise so often?
Well, I mostly see lack of desire, or what they call lack of desire. People coming in saying, it's just gone. I don't feel like having sex. I don't want it anymore. How do I get it back? And often it can either come from they just haven't had great sex yet and need some skills, some knowledge.
Define great sex.
For them. Whatever's going to be great sex for them. So if they want to have an orgasm every time, then okay, how do we work on that? If they don't, you know, but it's whatever is satisfying for them. It can also come from not understanding about life, and, you know, after you've had a baby or kids or stress of jobs and things like that, and not understanding that sex, like anything else, becomes a deliberate choice that you put into your relationship and make time for. And all those things can make sex kind of go way down on the list, and then you feel like your desire is gone, when really it's just kind of still there. It's just bringing it back and placing it where it needs to be, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I see a lot of people that have difficulty with the power struggle with initiation, that there can be rejection and hurt and wanting to be wanted. And so they'll have a lot of dance around initiation. And because of that, then they're not having sex, because they're either waiting or they're either waiting for their partner to initiate, or they've had so many fights that if initiation happens, something will happen there where sex just gets shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a lot of power play that way. I see trauma. People have traumatic mm-hmm. backgrounds mm-hmm. that can be triggered and naturally brought up. Guilt and shame can creep in.
That's
where people
huge.
Feel they feel bad for feeling good. That's a biggie. There can be other, that you can have pornography or other things happening and being pulled into the relationship. Those are some biggies.
Can we talk a little bit about the guilt and shame?
Yeah.
You said that was a biggie. What do you think causes that? What causes people to feel guilt and shame around making themselves feel good, like in a healthy relationship?
Again, a couple of things. How about if you're just brought up saying, don't, this is bad, wrong, don't do it. And then you walk in and get married, you know, within this 5-minute ceremony, and all of a sudden, okay, you're good to go. That's a hard transition for a lot of people to make mentally and emotionally, to be like,
they treat it like a light switch a bit.
Right. Mm. And it's hard for them to suddenly go, okay, I guess I can have sex now and not feel guilty about it. And so that's a big one. And then,
well, just the messages that people can be brought up with. Religious, I see a lot more guilt and shame with religious backgrounds, not just LDS,
right,
but conservative religions.
Mm-hmm.
Of, in particular, that virtue or virginity is the single most important thing to a person's identity. And so if that is, I don't want to say disrupted, but if that is, I'll say disrupted, or when you get married, all of a sudden you're like, well, okay, I'm no longer a virgin, but I'm supposed to be having sex, so
right,
how do
like
I resolve this?
Not,
what am
yeah.
I... It's kind of the... We talk a lot about the virgin and the whore. That in the biblical sense, those are our examples, that you're either
right.
a virgin or you're a whore. Well, how, that doesn't make for healthy sexuality
at
in,
all.
In a relationship.
Yeah. And or so. The last thing, too, is we talk about the minute you're born, you start learning about sexuality in that... It's kind of the way people interact with your body or and or teach you about your body. You have a lot of, it's natural for children to want to look at their own bodies and learn about them and explore.
Touch
and,
their genitals just
yeah.
like they do their earlobes and their fingers and their
right.
eyes.
I've heard it referred to as self-exploration.
Yeah. Exactly, right. But if that kind of gets shut down in a negative way, then that can also start creating shame surrounding their own bodies. Like, okay, I should not touch this ever. You know, I don't
right.
even know how this works. And so then you enter into marriage and you don't even know that you have a clitoris for some females, you know, and
leaving it up to your partner to learn your body instead
right.
of you knowing that
yeah.
that can really disrupt. Of
that puts a lot of pressure on somebody.
A ton of pressure. Instead of saying, here's my body, here's how it
I've
works.
Got to know what I want and what you want
right,
or
exactly.
what I like and what you like.
Yeah.
yeah.
And we joke that why is it okay for somebody else to touch our own body, but we can't? Like, you know,
yeah.
it doesn't make a lot
doesn't
of sense.
Make a lot of sense.
So for parents out there or for maybe young couples or people who are not yet in a sexual relationship, what advice would you give them to kind of help reframe that messaging? How what needs to happen so that we can extract that guilt and shame from sexuality and give people permission to experience healthy sexual things?
I think a lot of it comes up with confronting your own discomfort, because the biggest thing people avoid conversations because they're so uncomfortable with it themselves that if someone brings it up, they're like, and they'll freeze. And so I think starting with that is a good place of what was your messaging? What did you learn? What do you bringing? In our book, we talk about is your sexual history, and that everyone comes into a relationship with a suitcase. And whether you know what's in your suitcase or not, imagine going on a trip and you have the suitcase packed.
You don't know what's in it.
You have no idea what's in it.
Yeah.
And your partner has no idea what's in it. And then you get there and you're like, you have no idea. And so knowing your own sexual history, you're confronting your beliefs, your blind spots, your own places that embarrass you or make you uncomfortable.
You're right.
And educating on...
That's a difficult thing to do, I think.
It's very hard.
It
but
is.
Doable, very doable. A lot of it's just being willing.
Yeah. At what point should you confront those things?
Start before you have kids. Start now. Start whenever.
Yes.
If you need to go in the bathroom and just practice saying the word vagina or whatever
right.
it is, you know, and just say it until you can say it. Because with the information age, my poor kids, I talk about them a lot. But so I have a 15-year-old. And she came home from school one day and said, Mom, I heard this word, you know, what's a dildo? And inside I was like thinking,
oh my gosh,
you're 15. Why are you talking about dildos at school? But on the outside, I remained very calm, you know, looked at her and said, all right, let's talk about this.
And
she let me know. She said, if you don't talk to me about it, I'm just going to look it up.
Right.
And I would rather talk to her about it and have the conversation.
I bet you took a deep breath, too.
I did.
And that's the other thing we would tell people is, take a deep breath
mm-hmm.
and do the mantra, I can do this.
Right.
I just the other night, I was telling my son his birth story, and that opened a whole lot of questions of
mm-hmm.
how does the baby come out? And it's amazing how much, depending on developmentally where they're at, how you respond is almost more important than what you say.
Right.
Because they pick up on, is this an okay topic to talk about or not? Same with your spouse, same with your partner, same with people pick up on how it. Can you go there with them or no?
Right.
Right.
And so if you take that and make it a normal part of your conversation, then it'll just be part of the conversation.
You don't have to be a sex expert to start. You can just start where you are and go from there.
Yeah.
So what is a dildo?
I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
We could get into that.
So you guys have a process, the Be Healthy process.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Yeah. We came up with an acronym because we found that a lot of the same themes were coming up. And so one of the ways that we were thinking Be Healthy really is talking about healthy intimacy, healthy self, because I think a lot of these things fall into it. So I think Alicia and I will kind of go back and forth discussing these.
Yeah.
But the B stands for balance intimacy, that if, like a pyramid, it's got the equal sides, that if you're just trying to focus on sexual intimacy and you're neglecting emotional, physical, spiritual, however you define that, that your intimacy is going to be sorely out of balance, and having all these intimacies enhance each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what the B stands for.
Yeah.
So having those intimacies, if we talk about spiritual intimacy, mm-hmm. is that something that you have to experience together, or that you would experience on your own?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Yep, it could be both. That you're having a meaningful, and intimacy is kind of a seen and be seen, and allowing your higher power to be involved in your life, to be seen and to know and to be known.
Yeah.
And then as a couple, for some people, that's really a vulnerable, raw spot. Invite each other into something that's so sacred or vulnerable or
mm-hmm. yeah.
so playing together.
You don't have to define spiritual intimacy as just sitting in church together,
right.
or
right.
you know, it's more that kind of that meaningful sharing the dreams or being vulnerable with one another.
What are some ways to be intimate with each other without the sex, without sexuality?
So emotional intimacy is a lot of the sharing. It can be sharing not just the hard things, but the dreams, what happened in your day, sharing things that potentially, if you have a best friend that you're sharing everything with, but maybe you don't share that with your spouse for whatever reason, that you don't want that part of yourself to be known. I think flirting is an emotional intimacy. I think complimenting and acknowledging the positives, I think that's a biggie, because I think we can really cultivate criticism at times
mm-hmm.
and neglect the positive attributes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and just a little tip out there, and I'm generalizing now, I acknowledge that there are exceptions, but guys, more often than not, if you will help that emotional intimacy and talking a bit, it's going to help her want to be a little more physical with you, and women, vice versa. For guys, sex is like talking, and for a guy, and so those two can go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, just my little sex coach tip there.
Yeah.
Thrown in there.
Thank you for the tip.
Yeah.
I'm sure many men and women out there will thank you for that tip as well.
So based on that, then we talk about embracing your growth edge, meaning, you know, something is a little bit difficult, or having that conversation might be a little difficult, or taking that risk and walking out there, like, okay, I am going to approach this conversation, or I am going to reach over and touch your shoulder, you know, or I am going to do this, and taking that risk to see where your relationship can go.
It's moving out of the mediocre, the lukewarm. I kind of think of it, I always equate pushing your growth edge like the first time you went off the high dive.
Mm.
Scary, mm-hmm. you're not going to die.
Still haven't done that.
Push that growth edge.
Yeah.
Go to the pool.
Yep.
But
I take cold showers.
There you go. That's my growth edge. I don't know. But it's challenging the parts of you that you allowed comfortable to become habit. And mm-hmm. people want passion in their relationship. Well, passion isn't born out of comfort.
Well, it's interesting as a tangent.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading the other day Esther Perel.
Uh-huh.
If you're, I'm sure you're familiar with her. Yeah, Mating in Captivity. She talks about the incredible dichotomy that there is in a relationship, how we want to experience safety, but at the same time, we want to experience like the thrill of the unknown, and we want to be protected, but at the same time, we kind of want to some risk. And like what makes a healthy relationship is a balance of mm-hmm. of completely opposite things. We want intimacy, but we also want independence.
Right.
You know, like and it's just a really difficult thing. So if you build habits and you don't ever shake them up, then there's no balance. If you
right.
just get into this cycle of maybe just like always having sex in the bedroom,
mm-hmm.
you know, it can get boring and stale, or I guess that applies to just about anything. But
Tammy Nelson, she's a writer of some great books, and she calls it getting out of the sweatpants phase. where you just can hang out in your, like, the metaphorical sweatpants of your mm-hmm. relationship. But back to the whole idea of people wanting this passion, people will say, I just want to feel safe with you. That doesn't breed passion.
Mm-hmm. At all.
It's based on trust and risk. And trust is a component of safety. If you trust your partner, then you are able to risk. Safety is what keeps us protected and keeps us in that comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
So
you didn't get married or become lovers to then become roommates. I mean, there was a reason why you were highly attracted to this person in the first place and made this decision, and it wasn't just to become nice little roommates.
Does that happen often?
I think it does happen a lot, yeah.
And we see a lot of passion and erotic energy exist before people get married. Mm-hmm. Even if they dated for years, then they'll get married and that will shift. Because they can get into the mundane and the routine.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
So that's part of the work of a healthy relationship, is you have to literally work to keep things fresh.
You do.
You have to exert some sort of energy to be creative and.
And that's one of our, we actually.
Let's continue. Yeah, sorry. We'll get there.
That's one of the things that we talk about. Yeah.
So if we're going to keep going down the line, then having realistic expectations is crucial. Because, again, it's not going to be Hollywood sex all the time, especially if you are going to soccer games with kids or you have work or you've had, someone's had a baby or there are...
A medical issue arises.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or someone travels a lot. There are just realistic things that come into play, and understanding that and allowing your partner to have their needs and you have your needs, and, again, talking about that, like, okay, so we're to the point now where we can't realistically have sex 5 nights a week all over the house because we also have kids here, you mm-hmm. know. What can we do? What is realistic and how can we negotiate this?
In our book, we have another metaphor called how sex is like dining. And that when people look at all the varieties of dining experiences they have, that if you're short on time, you're more than willing to go through a drive-thru.
Right.
We don't allow ourselves the same luxury in our relationship. Right. Sometimes you need fast food sex.
Right.
You do.
It's the quickie in the bathroom. And that's good. You wouldn't want to live on fast food, but you also wouldn't want 7-course dining every night. It's not realistic. And
right.
So it allows for a broad range of experiences. And there's another model out there that I really like that talks about good enough sex. Sometimes it's just good enough. That I would dare say that you're not going to have fantastic sex all the time. That's not realistic. Good enough, which is satisfying, fulfilling.
Sex is comforting.
It can reduce stress. Exactly. It can be for a variety of reasons. There's that same model of the good enough sex is to bring sex into your real life and real life into your sex. That some people are like, I don't want to be intimate right now because I'm grieving. Well, that's a great time to be intimate with your partner. It would look different. You're not going to be potentially having kind of the crazy, erotic,
right,
spicy sex. But there's a place for that kind of intimacy.
Like soft, right, healing, sure. Intimate mm-hmm. sex.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's an important thing, is having realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, which is that work piece that you were talking about, Nate, of engaging your partner, make the commitment, increase the erotic energy in your relationship, flirt, send nice messages, create dates, schedule intimacy nights, schedule sex. People are like, really? That sounds so canned. Well, you can be as spontaneous as you want if it's planned, and we plan everything. Why don't we plan that?
Mm-hmm.
So that it becomes a priority and something that we nurture and foster and say, this matters, because then you start scheduling around it. Because what Alicia was saying earlier, it's really easy to have that get pushed down to the bottom of the line.
Mm.
And when you, this idea comes from Tammy Nelson, and when you schedule these nights, it's not like you're doing it after you've gone to dinner and a movie and you get home at midnight and you're tired.
Right.
It's its own special night that you are preparing and bringing your sexy best self to.
Sunday night sex night.
There you go.
Yeah. It takes off a lot of the pressure of initiation too, because you're both accountable for showing up, and then it can go from there.
And being present, because what we also hear is a lot of men will say, I don't just want a body. I mm-hmm. want a willing participant. So just laying there and allowing your body to
thinking about
be a vessel.
Grocery list.
That's not really what people
Well, in a
want.
Sense, that's just like using another body to masturbate.
Right.
If I'm going to be really said. Just that's straightforward
exactly
it. About
yeah. it. Yeah. And so that engaging your partner is you're deciding to commit and invest. Mm-hmm.
So what are some good ways, if you are planning sex into your life, to still kind of make it not seem like it's just an item on the to-do list?
If you're going, so say your sex night is Wednesday, so you start thinking about that Monday, you know, like, okay, what am I going to wear? Or should we have some chocolate? Or
and I'm that right there creates sexual energy
right.
in your relationship.
Yeah, because
you're
then
like, oh,
you're like,
yeah.
okay, Wednesday's coming. Yeah, so you might.
I'm bringing broccoli.
Right. But you might give each other a little bit more passionate kiss, you know, before you leave to work because you're thinking, all right, Wednesday's coming,
Wednesday
you know.
Night.
So it's not just. Okay, you know, ding, let's head to the bedroom. It's you're preparing kind of beforehand so that it's you create that energy.
Maybe it's
so when you know it's coming 2 days in advance, you can have foreplay for
totally.
48 yeah. hours.
You can have foreplay for 6 days before.
Look at you.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So you can. And couples will also say, well, can we have sex on other nights? Sure. This is just the one night where it's. You know
you're
right.
Show up and have that.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly because this is something I also see women out there that have had babies are like, well, that's not realistic. Don't just, those nights can also be for intimacy. So if you've had a baby, oftentimes people will view it as all or nothing. Give each other a head massage. Give each other a hand massage.
Right.
There's a lot of ways to be intimate that we limit it to just sexual intercourse.
Right.
Especially
and
once we get married.
Right. And so you don't have to just have this all or nothing of people will be like, the six week mark is coming with the OB. Well, you really can be intimate in small ways the whole time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it can also help your husband not feel like he's just been sent out to an island.
Right.
Waiting for you to come back.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next one is so important. Learn how your own body works.
Yeah.
This is so crucial. And unfortunately, well, there was a woman I was speaking to one time who really had no idea that she even had a clitoris or what it was or nothing.
That makes me sad and I'm a dude.
I was very sad. And she had been married for a long time and was like, I don't really want to. I'm done with sex. And I said, I don't blame you because, you know. And so learning how your body works, what it does. And I think people are nervous about that because they think, oh, well, that's you're talking about masturbation and we can't masturbate before we're married, blah, blah, blah. And I think there's a crucial difference between something you said, healthy self-exploration versus masturbation. You can learn about your body. You can touch your body without taking it to orgasm. You know, you can learn. Okay, that I like that touch. I like how it feels.
And you can take it to orgasm.
And you can
go, okay, this is my body response.
Right.
Right. You know.
And not guilt yourself about
right.
it.
Right.
Exactly. And not feel like, okay, well, I did that once. Now I'm doing it 8 times every day. You know, it's just different. And so being able to enter into your relationship saying, I know you're your own sexual agent. I know what feels good. I know what I like. And now I'm going to teach you. And I'm going to show you and we're going to work on this together.
And I think that's actually important as bodies change because our bodies change over our entire lifespan. And so I think that's important to keep engaging with your body and things that when you're newlyweds, certain things may have felt good. And if you hold to that, like, well, I knew what he or she liked 20 years ago. If you haven't asked, you probably don't know because I would assume most people change in 20 years.
Right.
They have different things they want. They have different likes. They have different needs, different preferences. And so that isn't something that once you figure it out, you've arrived.
Mm-hmm.
You need to keep
right
being in touch
that.
With your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So learn about it.
The other thing that Alicia talked earlier about is treating it like a skill. And really, it's no different than learning how to ride a bike. Any new skill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And keep working at it and educate yourself. And
one thing that we like to say is there is no rule that says you have to have sex your wedding night. Nothing. That's just her tradition. And taking the time, the more important thing is to create this relationship of trust. And taking some time to then continue to make out or take a shower together, you know, and see each other's bodies and get used to that. And then if that leads to sex or you're, you know, go ahead. But there's nothing that says, all right, we're at the hotel. We're exhausted from our day of our wedding. Let's just go have this, you know, whatever this is.
I'm sure there's a lot of pressure that surrounds that, that day and that moment. And that can actually probably lead to crappy sex.
If
you feel a lot of pressure and you're exhausted. And
yes.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say, too, is even if you've had sex, not having it on your honeymoon night, if you've had a long day.
Mm-hmm.
But we see in a lot of conservative cultures, people will have hang-ups 5, 10, 15 years that date all the way back to the honeymoon.
To their honeymoon.
That it all began there. The foundational blocks of their relationship began on their honeymoon because the focus of trust and intimacy wasn't at the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the most important thing people can do is to build that because they will have a lifetime of sex and great intimacy if they will allow that to unfold.
So what percentage of married couples do you think actually experience real good intimacy?
Oh, percentage. Quantifying it.
Yeah. Well, within conservative religious cultures, I would say a lower percentage.
A lot lower.
Yeah.
Percentage.
Because I think there is that reluctance to talk about it. There's the reluctance to explore their own bodies. There's a reluctance to, it's almost like you can have all this passion before you're married, but now we're married and now we have this. The weight of eternity has now settled on our shoulders. Mm-hmm. And we are proper. And it's like,
and we only have missionary sex in our bed. Yes. Every single night. Right, right. You know, twice a week or something like that.
Yes. Or once a month.
Just only to try and have a baby. You know, and
God wouldn't have given women a clitoris if it was just to have babies.
Right.
Right. Because there is no other function to the clitoris than
pleasure.
No, and that would also mean that you are only a sexual being between the reproductive years.
Right.
And then you're done.
Right.
Like once you're out of reproductive years, no need for sex.
Yeah.
Or intimacy.
Yeah.
So, side tangent, but I think that's...
I appreciate that side tangent. I think it needed to be said.
It does. It does, because that's one of our greatest evidences that sex is designed for...
Pleasure.
For pleasure, as well as the creative process. But, I mean, he didn't have to include the clitoris. He didn't have to do any of that. So,
nope.
Yeah.
But good thing he did, right?
Good thing. Yeah, it's a fantastic thing he did.
The next thing is having a conversation and negotiating. People sometimes, and negotiation, there's a book I'd like to recommend called Getting the Sex You Want. That's another Tammy. I'm a Tammy Nelson fan. Tammy, if you're hearing this, I'm a fan.
I'm going to send this to her.
You should. She'd probably love it. But negotiation can be difficult, and she provides some really good tools to negotiate that keeps... it's called Imago Dialogue, and it almost scripts how to walk you through precisely so you have kind of a listener and a receiver so that you can negotiate what you want, and you can also put out there a little bit of fantasy. And when I use the word fantasy, people often associate that with a variety of things. Porn, erotic, like just a lot of stuff, but fantasy.
I was thinking dwarves and elves, but continue.
Yeah, Dungeons and Dragons. But really, and when I have people say, well, I don't have a fantasy, I'm like, everyone has a fantasy. Yeah. If you maybe have a fantasy that your husband would just waltz in, take that trash out and be done. That's fantasy. But that can be vulnerable to say, this is what I want to try at our next sexual encounter. And that's where the negotiation and talking about it is okay, I may not be entirely comfortable with that, but I'm glad it's out there and let's see if we can work that in. Or I would like to have sex once a week. You would like it 3 times a week. Can we negotiate and work with that? You think we could find a middle ground?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be two.
Yeah, that would be the middle ground. But negotiating and having that conversation. And if you've had a bad experience with conversation, then you go back up to the top part of commit, be deliberate, engage your partner, make this matter. Don't allow some of these hurtful, negative things shape the rest of your life, which would then ultimately lead... It ultimately leads to divorce or affairs or other things to creep in.
Or a non-sexual
right. Which then leads to a lot of things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
And then the last thing we talk about, and we kind of talked about this at the beginning, is you know best. So you and your partner, you're the stewards over your relationship. And yes, it is, you can absolutely involve God because he created sex. He did. And you can talk to God individually about it. You can talk to God as a couple, but you don't need to be searching for outside sources to give you the rules over your relationship, because if it's going, if it works for you, and that, and I want that to be clear, it needs to work for both partners. Mm. If it works for your relationship, then that's what matters, and you are the stewards of that relationship.
I would say a really common question we get is, what is the healthy number of times to have sex a week?
Depends on the relationship.
What do you think?
Right.
And people, that again can throw them off. They just want to know. And then
do you think it's
be
because they've been raised being told what to do? The commandments and the rules. And then all of a sudden they've reached this point in their life where nobody's really talked about anything. And they just need somebody to tell them, this is what you should be doing. And this is how often you should be doing it.
Yeah. And then it does take away the hard parts of relationships, because you can just follow the rules, whether they're working or not.
Right.
And you don't have to really hunker down
and get real
and have go to some uncomfortable, vulnerable places.
Yeah.
If you just have the rules, then there's nothing to talk about, really.
Right.
Well, there's no rules except for the ones you set. There's guides and tools.
Right. At what point would you say a couple would need to come in and have therapy, like talk about this issue with using a third party? Is there a certain, like, are there warning signs that, like, hey, my relationship isn't very healthy right now, we should probably go talk to somebody?
Yeah. Like, again, if you're to a point in your relationship where sex is almost completely off the table and you don't know how, all you're ending up doing is fighting about it, that's probably a sign, okay, we need some help figuring this out and figuring out how to talk to one another about this. And we don't want to just end in fights all the time, and we want to bring sex back.
If you're having medical problems, mm-hmm. if you're having painful sex, if you're having a difficult time sustaining erection, and it's not just circumstantial, it's going on for a long period of time, that may be time to seek it out.
Mm-hmm. If you just want to learn some new skills, not new skills, but like, okay, I only know how to have sex missionary style, and I'm not sure where to go for another, you know, I'm not sure what to do. I'd like to explore something else. You know, go in and if you want to come into a sex coach, whatever, great, do it. Or find a book, or, you know.
What would you tell somebody who was scared to come in to visit a sex coach? Like, what are some...
It's not kinky. It's not... I'm not touching anybody. There are instances out there where that can happen if you want that, but there's no... It's talking... Okay, I liken it to this. It's like adult piano lessons. You took piano lessons as a kid because you wanted to learn right. how to play the piano. It's like that.
What happens in a typical session?
A lot of really just breaking down what is it that you want and kind of some goal setting. How are we going to achieve that? If the big thing is low desire, okay, how are we going to work on bringing that desire back? Do you need to buy some lingerie? Do you need to listen to some music? Do you, you know, involving the senses? Do we need to make some sex dates? Just mostly education, really.
But having the appointments allows for accountability.
It forces you on a regular basis to sit down and talk about these things. Mm-hmm. And you have a third party
yes.
in there who can help you remain neutral and like
right. yes.
have an actual healthy conversation.
Yes, because mm-hmm. a lot of people will say, well, I've tried that. Well, as a therapist and a coach, I'm taught to question, well, what does try look like? And they'll say, well, I tried this for 30 seconds. Okay, meaning, say exploring her clitoris and not having a sexual response. Saying, I tried this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a woman, if she tried it for 30 seconds, isn't going to have the response that she's looking for and might think she's broken and then move on from her life from there. That's where kind of a therapist and coach can guide you and help you not just be stuck in your own head and in your world.
What do you think are some popular misconceptions that a lot of couples have about intimacy in marriage?
You should know how to do it, and your partner should know, if they loved you, what you should like and what you want.
Yeah.
That's a biggie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the misconception that a woman can orgasm just through vaginal sex only.
Yeah.
There are women who can, but the percentage is much higher that women need to be stimulated on the outside or mm-hmm. other ways. And unfortunately, I think porn has kind of demonstrated, or they try and show, that a woman is just loving every single second of
super orgasmic
of vaginal sex, and that's a misconception.
Yeah, a big, and there's a website up though called Make Love Not Porn.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, there's that idea that sex is supposed to look a certain way.
Yeah. And that it will always be, it will, our desires will always match up and they'll always be the same, and we'll always want to have sex at the same time, you know, that it's just going to work again like magic. And really understanding that there's almost never a time where your libidos are going to match up perfectly, either due to age, jobs, kids, whatever. There's always something going on, and it will, your sexual life will always be changing as a result. And so, but it's good changes.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys think that having a less than healthy sexual relationship can warrant divorce?
Can you, what do you mean by that a little bit more?
If you have a bad sexual relationship, is that justification to get a divorce? And if so, when, and if not, why?
Well, the first question I would say is, are you putting the responsibility on how great your sex life is on your partner? How much ownership are you taking over to create and make your relationship better? Because what I see couples do is they'll say, they'll feel justified because of X, Y, and Z, but they haven't really done some confrontation to say, what's my contribution to the problem? What am I doing? And have I done everything I can to improve these things?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of room for people to have to address and work on issues before it gets to divorce. Where I do think it warrants divorce is when you have abuse present, mm-hmm. and it's persistent and ongoing abuse. I don't think anyone needs to stay and try and work on that. And I can see victims be the ones that are more wanting to keep sticking a scenario like that out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Good answer. What do you guys see any commonalities in couples who are more prone to having to needing to come in and talk about their sexual relationship? Like, is it are there like differences in religion or differences in beliefs or differences in backgrounds that kind of would be a common trigger for having an unhealthy relationship?
Well, again, I would say just any sort of conservative background or just a background where there's been trauma and abuse or anything like that. Those tend to be the couples that need some assistance, and or a lot of couples whose parents divorced, possibly. You know, I see a lot of that where because of that, there's this, again, this generational, well, okay, our parents didn't quite know how to work it out, and so I have no idea what I'm doing. And I might be able to have sex and in like a physical way, but I really don't know how to bring in the emotional aspect of it, the emotional intimacy and things like that. And how do I create this? And so there's kind of that commonality as well as just a lot of people don't have the skills that they need to have the healthy relationship they want.
And they have, I would say another commonality that where people come in is they have repeat patterns that keep coming up and coming up and coming up, and they can't break those patterns. And even though they want something different, they don't know how to create something new to break those patterns, to heal old wounds, to bring in new to their relationship. And so that's another common thing is people are having the same fight. They're having the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so they finally are like, okay, we need to go talk to someone and see someone.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I had another question. I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, yeah. We talked earlier about how most religions would teach to abstain from sex before marriage. And I know this might be a really loaded question, but what do you guys agree with no sex before marriage? And if not, like, is there it may depend on the person, but is there like a line of when it comes to intimacy that you think, if crossed, would become unhealthy
before marriage? So I guess where we talked about the trust in a relationship, the bonding hormones in sex are really, really strong. You have the oxytocin that's released, and, those create that like a physical bond and that emotional bond also between people. And so understanding how strong those are, it's if you're in a relationship where that trust is there, and it's going to create the intimacy that you want. And so by not spreading it around, but by creating a sense of, I guess, a sense of safety, or I tried this analogy once. I'll try it on your audience.
Okay. Sounds good.
But, so I kind of think of yourself as this kind of horse in a pasture, but a wild horse ready to go, but it's kind of in a smaller pasture. And then you enter marriage and the pasture opens up and it's a wide, huge pasture and you can go and roam, but you still have this kind of this guide, this boundary. It's not stopping you from things, but it could be preventing you from something dangerous.
The smaller pasture.
Yeah, the smaller pasture, like diseases or like, you know, traumatic experiences that you don't want to experience, things like that.
Or like that suitcase we were talking about. You could be filling it up with a bunch of stuff that you really don't want to take into a long-term relationship.
Right. It also, because of the bonding, depending on when you engage with sexual intimacy, it can keep you in a relationship longer than you would otherwise because you're looking at your relationship and that partner with a different set of eyes. So I don't think that there's a... Religiously, there's bottom lines and rules. Therapeutically and from a coach, it's really considering the pros and cons and the realities of what bringing sex into your relationship entails and if you're ready and wanting to handle that.
Right, right. And if you're ready and willing, if you are a religious person and you understand the rules and boundaries, and if that's something where you want to discard those, that's, you know, that's your choice. But there are consequences that come with that as well. So it's just, again, like Kristen said, understanding the pros and cons and deciding what you want to do.
Right.
So this is a little bit off top, a little tangent.
Okay.
But when it comes to monogamy, do you think that monogamy is an innate characteristic, or do you think it's more of a learned behavior?
That's a really good question.
It is a good question. And I think that monogamy is, especially in this day and age where there's so much opportunity. I mean, having a website that makes so much money with the tagline of life is short, have an affair.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pressure to look outside.
There's a website that says that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ashley Madsen.
Thanks, Ashley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is targeted towards married couples. That is their demographic. And so I think monogamy is more of an attitude and a commitment. It is a verb instead of a feeling. If people view monogamy as I'll be faithful and committed if my relationship's going well, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah.
To stay committed and be monogamous.
Through most of human history, marriage and relationships have been based on practical reasons. You know, we have this farm, we got to have these kids to help raise, you know, be on the farm. And so we're here together. That's what we're doing. It was very practical.
Right.
But we don't have those reasons to stay together anymore. It's much more just emotionally based. And so it's deciding if this is what, you know, you want this as part of your relationship. It creates that trust again. Do we want this, and do we have this foundation, and then working at it? And if that's how I would define the monogamy now.
There's a great article out there called Hot Monogamous Sex, and I love the premise of it because he's like, you know, in monogamy, someone will say, really, you're going to limit yourself to one person? And this at the time happened to be a single guy who wasn't dating. And so the guy that got asked the question said, I bet I'm getting a lot more sex than you are on a regular basis and have a lot more opportunity to expand my sexual horizon because I'm with one person who knows my body, knows me, and I have a trusting relationship with that I can risk.
Do you think that's true?
Yeah.
I do.
Well, I joke with my husband because I have 7 children. And so I just turned 41. So there we go.
You guys stayed busy.
Yeah. But I said, hey, look, you now get to have sex with a 41-year-old mother of 7. You've never had that opportunity before, you know?
Right.
And so he's had sex with a lot of women over our married life, me, but you know, I've changed over our married life. And so we kind of joke that we're having all sorts of experiences with the same person.
Do you think it's worth having the conversation of redefining monogamy because the type of relationships we have has changed so much and now it's more emotional companionship that we're looking for? I think this is going to turn into a long question. I think a lot of people have the misconception that once they commit themselves to somebody, they're not going to be sexually attracted to anybody else. I think that's completely false.
Oh, yeah. That's not true.
But was his name Dan Savage?
I know you're talking about.
I saw a video of him a couple of weeks ago where he talked about redefining monogamy and how in the past, you know, people had concubines or they had mistresses, and that was like a socially acceptable thing. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, even before that, people would get married in an exchange for property. And right. It was more of a, like you were saying, a more practical reasons to get married. You know, we need the companionship. Go back to Jane Austen days or whatever.
We need the land.
Right. But now, because those things aren't involved, like, do we need to redefine monogamy and say that if somebody only cheats once or twice, they're still being monogamous most of the time and we should reward them for that? Or should we?
I think this is where couples need to take implicit assumptions and make them explicit. Mm-hmm. I think that's where couples get hung up, is that one person would say, for example, we'll just take the females, is that you don't go to lunch with another female, like her partner isn't to go to lunch with another female, and he comes home and he goes to lunch, says he went to lunch with another female.
Mm.
That causes a problem and can make her be like, you breached our trust, you breached our agreement. There's a lot of implicit assumptions that people bring to the table that they don't talk about, and that's where people, I think cheating is an entire spectrum. You can have someone that's engaging on Facebook with an ex lover.
Emotional cheating.
Uh-huh. And they'll say, well, I never had sex, so it's not cheating. And the other person will say, it absolutely is. And so redefining, I think, is, I think it's bringing it more open and having to really talk about it. Deciding
what you want for your relationship again. What's monogamy for us? What does it look like? And is this going
to
work for us?
I think it's dangerous to have a blanket justification of, well, we're just in a day and age where it's not possible. For some people, that is very much possible. Mm-hmm. And so, but some people may say, I'm great with you going to lunch with your friends. And it's the kind of thing that I know I could show up and sit down and eat with you guys. And because of that, I'm totally good with it.
Right.
You know.
I think, it sounds to me like the problems occur when you haven't had the discussion, and then somebody jumps to a conclusion and says, you breached our trust, and somebody and the other person didn't realize that was
something that was, because a lot of people will say, well, that's obvious. No one would do that. Well, there aren't these big, huge, universal truths because we all come from different backgrounds.
So what is some advice for you regarding, maybe if you haven't had this conversation and something like this happens, what's the appropriate way to react to maintain a healthy relationship with your spouse or your partner? If something like that comes up, like if I were to come home and tell my wife, my non-existent wife, hey, I had dinner with a coworker today and it was a woman and she flips out. Like, maybe she doesn't flip out. Let's stop before the flip out. What's the appropriate way for her to respond if she feels like that was a violation of trust?
I would say I define that kind of as being triggered.
Uh-huh.
She was triggered, and to, instead of attacking you first, take a deep breath so that, because when you are triggered and you move into kind of fight or flight,
deep breaths can do a lot, apparently.
Really, yeah. Because, well, you can't, Schnarch actually talks about how when you are triggered like that, that you move into fight or flight and you move into the reptilian part of your brain and you can't engage in rational conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. It's physically impossible. And so your heart rate's going. So by deep breathing, you slow your heart rate down or pull yourself out of the situation. If you know you're triggered, don't talk about it, because really, then the best response is to get more information instead of accusing is, well, help me understand. I didn't know that was a part of our relationship. Can you tell me where you were coming from? Have I met this coworker? Getting information.
Was it a romantic thing? Was it just a business thing?
Yeah. Right. Taking a step back so that you can then engage and say, what was this about? And then
how do we redefine the boundaries around this and for the future?
Yeah. Exactly. So that we know. And having enough respect for your partner to also, if there's someone in your life that they would say, I really don't want them in your life. And here are the reasons why. And then to say, okay, this is hard, but I'm committed to you, not that person. And let's move on.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we just lost Kristen.
We did. We had an appointment.
But that's okay, because we're reaching our time cap anyway. We're almost an hour. And anyway, I want to be respectful of your guys' time. So is there anything else that you'd like to add? towards the end?
Towards the end.
Any last bits of advice, Alicia?
Have fun with your sexuality. I think this is a big thing as a coach that I see, that it's so weighted down now for people, and they've taken a lot of the fun out of it, and people are afraid to have fun, like to giggle or do something fun or use whipped cream or, you know, just whatever. That sex can be just fun and playful, and you can be the Relief Society president or a good conservative religious person and still have really fun sex. You know, those two go hand in hand. You don't have to be compartmentalized. And that's the last thing I would put out there is have fun. And if you need to talk to God about whether or not sex can be fun, do it, because I think you'll be surprised.
He's got your back.
He really does.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been awesome. I'll link to most of the references in your book and everything. And I believe, do you guys have a conference or something
coming up? We have a workshop
coming up. Do you want to plug that really quick?
Yes, it's at the Hotel Monaco. It's Saturday, September 14th. It's for women only. It's called On the Edge of the Bed, a Tastefully Sexy Workshop for Women. And we're going to address a lot of the things that we've talked about here, but kind of more in a workshop-type manner, a lot of interaction. And
what was the date one more time?
Saturday, September 14th.
Okay.
You can go to the website, thehealinggroup.com, and get more information about that. But it's $125 unless you put in the promo code website, and then you get $20 off. And that would be like 6 hours worth of therapy or coaching, which would be $600. For 100.
So yeah. Huge value.
Yeah, huge value. And like I said, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a great time.
Awesome. Well, I hope that somebody in the audience finds some value in that and shows up, because I think there are a lot of people who are probably struggling with a lot of the stuff that we talked about today.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for being so open and giving some of your time so we could talk about all this.
That's one of my favorite topics.
Awesome. All right. That's it then.
Okay,
thanks for listening. Yep, bye.
Can we hit it like we did one more time on the top? Can we hit it like that one more time?